And welcome to Agenda. Chris Thomas has been a regular thorn in government's side since the Chief Minister asked him to vacate his office. In recent months, he's been championing the cause of local government, hinting at reform, but calling for greater participation of commissioners and councillors in the reform process. He's interjected in the 20-mile-an-hour resident zone debate and has an interesting take on the current leadership in the Isle of Man government. And he joins me now in the studio. So, Chris, if we start off with local government, you've had quite a bit of an interest in that. Now, of course, I should at this point declare that I'm clerk to the commissioners of Arbury and Rushen, but hopefully that won't stop me grilling you appropriately. What's been your interest?
Good evening, Phil. Good evening, everybody. Delighted to be here live. Shame we haven't got any listeners because they're all up in Ramsey with the Council of Ministers event. But hey, there was a very important select committee about Braddon commissioners back before 2010. There was another one back in 2012. A piece of legislation came forward to address the issues in that select committee to do with members' interests and to do with lots of other technical issues. I, at one point, took a bill through the House of Keys nearly. Before that, it got stopped once before. And I was absolutely shocked on the 28th of January this year when the bill was finally about to become law, 25 years on from when it had first started. Sorry, 15 years on from when it had first started. And Mr. Hooper brought forward, apparently in his own name, some quite monumental, perhaps even catastrophic amendments. And I indicated to the House of Keys that this might not play very well and it might slow the bill down. And unfortunately, that's what's happened. It's gone to the Legislative Council from the House of Keys. And just as I warned, it's just stopped. There was consultation and it's now just there over the summer and we're still no further forward.
Well, it's not stopped, is it? I mean, there's an evidence stage in LegCo. Local authorities wrote in and said they felt that they needed a bit more time because they were given, I think, about 10 days to develop their case to present evidence. And then the mover of the bill in LegCo decided to pull it. So it's not dead and buried by any means. And if the summer isn't long enough for local authorities to get their act together and get evidence presented, then you wonder how long they would possibly need. So it comes back to Legislative Council and the first Legislative Council sitting, which is the last Tuesday in October.
Well, it is stopped, Phil, because we've been in this situation once before. More or less an identical bill went through the House of Keys in the last administration, and then Legislative Council decided not to take it because they wanted the new Keys to have a look at it. Then this bill, I tried to move it even that when I wasn't Minister of Infrastructure because my name is on this bill. It was taken away from me by the Department of Infrastructure, and then we have a new minister and new departmental members. Supposedly Mr. Hooper did this as a backbencher, but it turned out from what the Chief Minister told me in the House of Keys last week, there was more official endorsement than it first seemed about this, and it stopped. You know, we need to change the pensions legislation to save local authorities, ratepayers, money in terms of pensions costs, and that hasn't happened as yet. In terms of legal change, the codes and the disclosure of interests hasn't happened as yet in law, and it could have done. So it got very complicated when Mr. Hooper came up with this idea in his new clause one of changing local authorities may provide something to the fact that they must provide something. And then it got even more complicated when the Department of Infrastructure consulted local authorities on fines for local authorities if they didn't do to the standard that was specified.
And all that's certainly the department's position is all that's actually being done here is a change in the law that will allow the department by order to introduce new functions or to require local authorities to do new functions. That order has to be approved by Tynwald.
There has to be consultation.
So You know, this is me playing devil's advocate here, because with my local authority hat on, I can see some issues associated with that. But you know, it doesn't seem that unreasonable. There still has to be consultation. Local government ultimately will do, whether it's a by order or whether it's a change in primary legislation. If Keys decide that local authorities should do more stuff, Keys have the authority. They're the highest court in the land.
But let's be realistic. It's already the case that minimum standards can be set for local authorities, just they haven't been for 15 years. It's already that there's an issue up north to do with the Northern Civic Amenity site. There's issues to do with the delegated powers and responsibilities regarding highways all around the island. There's a swimming pool issue. There's waste collections issue in the south and the west to do with the relative costs borne by people. We're not going to solve those just by changing the primary law in this way. We needed to be very specific about the problem that we're trying to solve was, and then to actually come forward and address that properly. What's actually happened is we've got another year of delay to a piece of legislation that was needed soon after it was first talked about in 2012, 2013. And what we actually now need, and we will end up getting, is a second local government reform bill, probably with these controversial elements taken out.
And you say all this, but it isn't another year's delay, because ultimately all that's happening is the evidence stage has been delayed. The evidence stage, likely as not, will take place over a couple of days at the end of October. The bill itself, even if it had gone to clauses at the last sitting of Legislative Council, the third reading would have had to take place at the end of October anyway. So effectively, you're probably delaying the bill by a couple of weeks. It's not quite the doom and gloom that you're suggesting, surely.
Well, I suggest that on the 28th of January, clauses went through. We could have been into the Legislative Council straight away thereafter. I wrote to all the local authorities, informed them about it. The minister decided to try and do it before the May the 1st new members arrived and the election in April. That didn't happen. We're now into a consultation. So once it's gone through the Legislative Council and waits for royal assent, and then the appointed day orders will be, it'll be January next year, and that's a year, Phil. But anyhow, I take your point. It's not the end of the world. We've already lost this 14 years or something on these necessary changes, but it's very frustrating. You can't just rush into difficult topics and just think by force of will you can get them changed. As I said at the time, it might be a brilliant move by Mr. Hooper, but I worried that it was just a reckless move, and it's turning out to basically just have ruffled feathers. And we were on the verge of getting some necessary changes, and we still need, because there's lots of stuff that hasn't been touched, another local government amendment bill after the election.
And that may well be the case. Is it necessary, if you are talking about changing laws and things like that, wouldn't it make more sense, I suppose would be a better way of putting it, to actually have the conversation with the local authorities and basically say, cards on the table then, we think you should do more stuff, we don't think you're doing as much as you should be doing, we don't think you're meeting the required standards, and this is where we think we should be going. Should that conversation not take place before you start introducing new, or even thinking about the need to introduce new legislation? Surely to goodness, that conversation, if it's an honest conversation on both sides, potentially you can find a way forward without having to change the law.
Exactly. So policy and settled policy should always go ahead of law. Otherwise, you end up arguing about policy as the law goes through, which is suboptimal. And secondly, you're completely right. You and I and others spent ages talking with local authorities about these delegated authorities for local authorities helping maintain some of the highways in certain ways. You and I spent ages talking about moving more towards a regional approach to housing waiting lists and housing maintenance. There's been lots of talk about civic amenity sites, recycling being linked together, and all these policy issues are still there and they need to be fixed. through consensus before we change the law, and we will need another bill. You can't just do it by a backbencher who happens to be in the department with the support of the minister, it turns out, because Mr. Cannon had to concede on the 24th this month that Dr. Hayward had actually broken collective responsibility by voting with Mr. Hooper for a new clause too.
And that's usually a sacking offence, isn't it?
It can be a sacking offence. Yeah, I've never breached collective responsibility in that way without telling people in advance that's what I was going to do. So and I've been sacked apparently according to the media releases, but you know, at least I was asked to step down, and I do think it's quite a serious issue, but the Chief Minister's decided to let it go on this occasion.
And I don't know, you tell me, is this because so many ministers have departed from Council of Ministers that the Chief Minister, particularly with a year to go, feels that he can't afford to lose another minister?
Yeah, two things. I think firstly, it shows that there was not a lot of attention to this. It sounds like the Department of Infrastructure didn't tell the Chief Ministers the whole story. They didn't perceive that I would immediately latch onto this and write to the local authorities to make sure they knew what was going on, which is all I did. I didn't stir them up beyond at least just informing them what was going on. And secondly, you make a good point. I've said now for 6 or 7 months, I believe the Chief Minister to an extent is a prisoner inside his own Council of Ministers. And there are issues on which I don't believe he agrees with the Council of Ministers' position. And local authority reform was always going to be a touchy issue in the northern parishes. It's obvious that there's going to be kickback with the idea of rates burden being imposed on people by a Department of Infrastructure diktat. I do think it was I'm criticising council ministers for not having paid attention to the detail, and I'm saying it doesn't seem to be a completely joined up and unified council ministers at the moment.
I mean, that's an extraordinary thing to say, that you think the Chief Minister is a prisoner in his own council. I mean, surely to goodness that can't be the case. I mean, the Chief Minister effectively is the boss.
He appoints people, he can remove people. That is a ministerial grade. Obviously, departmental members are a collective responsibility for the council ministers. So, you know, when I said first time that he was a prisoner in his own council ministers, the context was he'd made me departmental member into the Department of Health and Social Care. And then a couple of weeks later, Council of Ministers asked me to step down, or told me to step down as departmental member in the Department of Health and Social Care. So that's when I coined the phrase, he's a prisoner in his own council ministers. I think we've seen that more with 20 mile per hour limits, with approach to energy, with approach to housing. You know, we have two different clear political factions inside the council ministers and inside Timwell. There are lots of variations on them. Okay, it might be argued that in the last 15, 20 years, we've always had chief ministers who've had to rule with different points of view inside their council ministers. Fair point. But there was a general consensus about the direction we're going in. And if you just ask basic questions in the island at the moment, I don't think it's clear which way the chief minister wants to go, because he has to stick to the collective responsibility of his balance of the council ministers. So when it comes to gas, alternative energy, we haven't really got an energy policy now. When it comes to housing, it's not clear to me whether we're in favour of home ownership or we're in favour of building commissioners' houses. There are lots of, when it comes to social care, everything that was achieved 5 or 6 years ago has been put on hold, likewise with social security. So to me, we've had a policy directionless government, and we can't afford that next time. Chris Robertshaw and the people who started saying that are right. We need to take back control of the way that policy is set, the way that elections take place, and the way that governments are formed after the election, based on policy, not on personality. It's the wrong question to ask who should be the next chief minister. The right question to ask is, what are the crucial attitudes, and what does this candidate believe in terms of dealing with that issue versus that candidate?
It certainly was surprising, maybe it would be the best way to put it, when I asked the Chief Minister on Perspective yesterday, what he was hoping his government was going to achieve over the course of the next 12 months. And basically it was compliance with the Moneyval inspection. That seemed to be the top priority. And yeah, I know it's important, of course it is, but I'm not sure that would be high on the list of most people on the street in the Isle of Man. But anyway, that's
for no. But I want to defend the Chief Minister a little bit now. I think he said a bit more than that. So I think I got the impression that housing was quite important. But the problem is we don't know what type of housing. It used to be more homes occupied. So we used to, the policies at the beginning were going to be addressed to filling up the 6,000 empty properties that have been identified. That's just gone. It's been replaced by converting the former nurses' home into a block of apartments for key workers. It used to be affordable housing. The definition of those key workers don't meet the classic traditional in-law definition of affordable housing, but Mr. Ashford includes them in the numbers of how affordable housing he quotes. So I rest my case. You know, the Chief Minister was singing the praises of the government in terms of building houses, but what sort of houses they're building is ambiguous. Likewise with energy, to me, it's just incredible that 4 years on, with the Climate Change Act in place, we can't actually say how long the gas pipeline will be pumping gas to the power station.
And this is defending the Chief Minister, yes. And
all I mean is he's just a... Well, OK, I take your point.
Yeah, I mean, it just surprised me in that whole conversation that we had that the Chief Minister wasn't able to fire off those sort of bullet points. And maybe, actually, your suggestion is explains a lot of what was going on then if the Chief Minister feels that he's not in charge of the council of ministers. I don't know.
So I was defending him in the sense that I did think his list of achievements was coherent and it was politically necessary because he's defending the government that he heads. But what people need to hear is that he's a prisoner inside his own council of ministers and they're split on so many issues.
And what's issues. That down to? Because, I mean, in every council of ministers I served in, and I served in three different council of ministers, we had probably as wide a range of views in council of ministers as existed in the more public forum in Tynwald. But effectively the art of politics is making people with disparate views find some common ground and develop policies based on that. Now, that means that Manx politics tends to be kind of middle of the road, nothing too radical, because you have to bring everyone along on that journey. Are you basically saying that's not happening anymore?
That's not happening. And I think if you go back to the 70s and the 80s, Sir Miles Walker laid down a direction and then formed a government based on that direction, a prosperous and caring society. So many people remember it. On the other, that stimulated a response from the Alternative Policy Group, who were more interested in changing the way that taxes were collected and a few other issues I know, and I could repeat some of the differences. So that was a big politician, alongside other big politicians, defining the public policy debate. I don't think we've had that in the last 5, 10, 15 years. I think we've lost. Look, where we are now is there's more MHK experience in local authorities with a former chair of the Office of Fair Trading, two former ministers and a former chief minister than there is in the Legislative Council, where nobody has served in the House of Keys. In fact, there's more experience in the House of Keys from the Legislative Council than there is from the House of Keys in the Legislative Council, because three people have moved back into the House of Keys from the Legislative Council. So what I'm saying is we've got a group of politicians that are not like they were in the olden days when you got a free turn as an alderman at the end of your time as a Legislative Council member and minister. You had people who'd been in politics for a long time and knew what you said to be the true, which is politics is about policy. It's not about photo opportunities and being nice to everybody and trying to stay friends with everybody. It's about identifying the real policy choices and laying out clearly what you're going to do about them. So,
but again, and I think the Chief Minister made this point on Perspective yesterday, and I think it's a very reasonable point to make. I said, well, How does losing most of your senior civil servants, the experience of those senior civil servants, how has that helped? And of course, he made the point, well, if you want to change, if you feel the need for some more significant change. Sometimes the older ideas need to make way for the new. So perhaps the new way of doing things with less experienced politicians may not be all a bad thing.
Well, you were mixing up politicians and civil servants. Even when I started in 2013, I was very impressed that the civil servants 2013 to 2016 were clearly laying out options and research papers about policy options to those who they thought would, to all of us, but particularly focusing on those they thought would be coming back. I think I've noticed that that's dropped off. So I do think...
So you know, that doesn't happen anymore?
I don't think that happens as much as I perceive it doesn't happen as much as it did back in, even when I joined. And I perceive that the, you know, I'm going to be the champion of good public policy and good civil servants in this election, because we need to respect them to actually help us as politicians do the answer. So I think politicians have gone too far chopping civil servants' heads off, in my humble opinion. In terms of politicians, you know, I was comparing Sir Miles Walker with recent senior politicians. Obviously, Sir Miles, when he wrote those papers, hadn't been in politics for a long time. You know, Mrs. Thatcher had just had one short brief term as a politician before she became Prime Minister. Likewise with Tony Blair, you don't have to be an experienced politician to be good as a politician, but you do have to have a vision and a clear mandate. And the way you get the clear mandate is having clear policy ideas backed up by facts, rather than just amorphous stuff like we need to do something about some problem in housing, which is not really clear what it is. I couldn't believe when I got to be, you know, I was going to be Mr. Cannon's housing czar. By the time I took up the role, I was going to be the chair of a committee without a budget, without any staff, with more votes against me than I had on it itself. And when I started, you know, I was trying to get a clear answer. Are we for people who own their own homes, or are we for building commissioners' houses? Are we going to support the development of the rental market or not? Are we going to do something about vacant properties, or are we not? And it turned out the priority was homelessness, and all the money from the housing community's budget has been spent on homelessness. And I don't think that was particular. That was a very important issue, but it was not the only issue that people identified on the doorstep. And I can't actually tell you what the vision is for housing now. I can tell you what hasn't happened that I would like to have happened, and I will be laying that out more clearly.
But you did have, what was it, 2 years as chair of the Housing and Communities Board?
I had, I think, 1 year as chair of the Housing and Communities Board. So I had about 3 months when I was, writing the strategy by myself, and then people were being co-opted by council ministers once I started. Basically, my downfall was when I voted against the island plan. So I got a letter from the council ministers to say they weren't confident in me as housing person if I'd voted against the island plan. So I was sent Tim Crookall and Laurie Hooper to mine me as ministers, and there were two more members who were appointed to the board. So I was one member of five, and we never had a staff, we never had a budget. But I am pleased with the direction that we laid out, and I will be defending that direction. And I do think it's frustrating that we haven't managed to do more to solve the real issue of housing. But I could say the same about energy and so many other areas as well.
And I mean, you mentioned there Chris Robertshaw. I mean, Chris was a member of the House of Keys for 10 years. You've been a member now for, more than 10 years now? And you're still talking this particular game. Surely to goodness, you should have managed to achieve something by now in terms of getting policy back to the heart of what people look for in politics.
Yeah, I agree. So I applaud Chris Robertshaw for having taken the initiative. And alongside that, there were two or three others who took similar initiatives at the same time. One person even produced a manifesto for the people in 15 minutes, which I have a huge amount of respect for. So you just put into ChatGPT or something, do me a manifesto to say that I'm going to solve the Isle of Man's problems for the people. And he produced a manifesto. Chris has got three big ideas. We're running out of money. There's something wrong with our political system, and that we don't do strategy right. Fine. But that's just talk, and that's just nothingness. We now need to know from Mr. Robertshaw and others, me included, exactly which strategy we need and what we're going to do about it. And I mean healthcare.
And this is all well and good saying this, but I mean, rather than telling me that you need to have this, why don't you tell me what the answers are?
So which one? What area then?
Well, okay, you're talking about putting politics back in terms of persuading people to vote on policy rather than on personality. How do we go about doing that?
So, back in the day, the Executive Council was proposed by the chair of the Executive Council to Tin Ward and was then voted en masse by Tin Ward. That would be a start after the election. But the election has really started, especially now Mr. Robert Shaw has made it very obvious. So therefore we need policies and actions with associated funding associated with it. So for instance, an example of that would be Mrs. Christian's motion, support for the motion brought in terms of autism strategies was perfect because it said there's no point approving a policy and a set of actions unless there's funding with it, and that's what we've got to do.
So we're almost out of time now. Where do we go from here? I mean, we've only got a very short time to sort this. Do we follow Chris Robert Shaw's lead? Do we still have confidence that the Council of Ministers can turn things round before the election? What do you think the answer is?
Number one, we applaud Mr. Robert Shaw for very publicly making this initiative because his timing's near enough right and the initiative is right. And we need to have people like Mr. Robert Shaw, myself and others, come in with specific lists of funded actions that need to be done in the first year, in the second year, after the general election.
But we've still got a year of this government. Surely to goodness, there must be something that can be done
now. As I said, the second point I would make is we need to, you know, you can't do it entirely yourself. And I do think we need to get enough momentum behind that so civil servants take this seriously and start actually helping us cost it. So I'll give you one of my major proposals. My major proposal is I believe that the National Insurance Fund is the bedrock of social security and pensions. At the moment we've got 100 million that's out for the vague thing called the economic fund. That should be transferred back into the National Insurance Fund.
Well, sadly that is the end of the program, but thanks very much, Chris, and thanks to you for listening.
Always feel pleased.